We've got another guest joining the show, Ivan Enlund. And, you know, the country, our country is broke from welfare and warfare. And Ivan basically is opposed to both, but he's mainly been concentrating on the warfare part of the equation. He's also the author of the book Recarving Rushmore. Ivan, welcome to the Peter Schiff Show.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you know, Republicans often criticize Democrats for supporting the welfare state, but at the same time, they are advocating the warfare state. And of course, the country is broke as a result of both. But you've been focusing attention on the real cost of fighting all these wars.
Well, I also look at, yes, not only overseas, but domestically. Many of the programs of the welfare state originated during wartime. Many conservatives don't know that, but I would argue that conservatives usually criticize FDR for creating the big government, but actually I think we really should say it started in World War I with Woodrow Wilson, and that the New Deal, FDR just brought a lot of the same people back, renamed the agencies, and that did a lot of the same things during the wartime economy, because Woodrow Wilson took over the entire economy in World War I. And that was the first time that was ever done. So the welfare state accompanies the warfare state.
Yeah,
it's the same government.
That's a great point. I mean, I've often pointed out that America has lost every war, because every war, even if we won the battle, we lost freedom in the process. A lot of the terrible laws that we have, the very first income tax in America was during the Civil War. That's when it came in. That's when the first time we had paper money was during the Civil War. It went away, but they resurrected it later on. But the original, precedent for it happened during the Civil War. The estate and the gift tax, that came because of World War I. That didn't exist before. The Federal Reserve got power to buy Treasury bonds as a result of World War I. They weren't able to monetize debt before the war. The withholding tax came as an emergency wartime tax in 1942. So, and the reason this happens, and like, you know, the Patriot Act, we just got that because of the war on terror. But when there's a war, the public is willing to accept things from government that they never would accept during peacetime. So governments, in a way, start wars because it creates a backdrop that lets them to usurp power and destroy individual liberty that they never could do if they didn't have this imminent threat of war.
Also, I think, it sets the precedent, as you so correctly state, but it also, whatever party's running the war, they have to get the support of the other party, and that usually means handing out goodies. And mm-hmm. So you have the log rolling problem where everybody's happy if Bush invades Iraq, you got to get the Democrats, so you got to shell out some more. And of course, that's what we saw. George Bush at the time had spent more domestically than any president since Lyndon Johnson. So not only did we spend a lot, $1.3 trillion on the Afghan and Iraq wars, but we have also created more government spending at home.
Yeah, and you know, at least in World War II, the government asked Americans to save. The government asked Americans to cut back, to be more austere, and instead of consuming goods, to buy war bonds to help finance the war, whereas President Bush, in the exact opposite, not only did he not want Americans to sacrifice to help pay for the war, he told Americans to go out and buy things, to go out and shop, to buy new cars, to spend even more money at the same time that the government was spending more money. And we just put the whole war on a credit card.
Right. And that's what Bush is partly responsible for, the huge deficits and the increase in debt. It's not just Obama. Obama has certainly done his share, too. But Bush was also involved. And part of that stemmed from all the wars we were fighting. Not all of it, of course, but some of it did.
Yeah, and of course, how do we change it? Because, you know, there's a war, obviously, you know, within the Republican Party right now. You've got guys like Rand Paul, who is now gaining stature in that party, representing a libertarian wing that wants to dial back the warfare state. But you still have the old guard, John McCain kind of neocons that believe that, you know, you got to just spend more on the military. No matter what, we have to spend more. Otherwise, you know, we're just going to be invaded by terrorists, and you know, the whole country is going to implode.
Well, the basic tenet of government is to hype fear, whether it's in the domestic sector or whether it's in the security sector. And so conservatives like to focus on the domestic, you know, sector. Like, if we don't have the, you know, the Food and Drug Administration, all our food's going to rot and whatever. But they do the same thing in the national security area. They hype the threats. Like, we had a terrible attack on 9/11, but now we're fighting groups that, like the Pakistani Taliban, and the people in Yemen and the people in Somalia, that we've created new enemies by doing that. So we have to learn to fight the people that attack us and forget about all the rest.
Yeah, and that's part of, you know, usually almost like another third rail in the Republican Party is if you can be labeled soft on defense, as if somehow your patriotism is demonstrated by how much borrowed money you're willing to throw at the military. And if you believe that we should cut back on government spending, that you're not a patriot and you're not a true Republican and you can't go anywhere in the Republican Party.
Well, I think that's right. And I think we have to change that. I think we need to go back, instead of using Reagan as a model, we need to go back to Calvin Coolidge. He believed in international law. He believed in not getting involved in foreign wars. And he cut the federal government by half. Ronald Reagan, using the neoconservative model, actually increased government spending as a proportion of GDP. And you can say, well, okay, it was during the Cold War. Well, even if you agree with that, the Cold War is over, and I think mm-hmm. we can't afford it anymore. We have to have national, mm-hmm. it's not retrenchment. The yeah. neoconservatives will say, oh, you're pulling back, our enemies are going to get, you know, be emboldened. But I would call it national rejuvenation,
yeah.
because the economy is the basis of all other indices of national power, including the military.
Yeah, Ronald Reagan is not the best role model because his actions didn't match his rhetoric. I mean,
right.
he talked
exactly.
a great game, and he did accomplish quite a bit. But where he failed is in reducing the size of government. If he simply would have accomplished what he set out to, if he had abolished all the government agencies that he campaigned on getting rid of, had he actually you know, presided over a reduction in the size of government, not just a reduction in tax rates, we would have had a much more meaningful, lasting economic boom, and then he would have been, you know, something that we could have held up. But now, you know, it's more the idea of Reagan than what actually happened.
Yeah, I think it's a myth. And also, when we say the word neoconservative, what are we conserving? I mean, a conservative is for small government, and neoconservatives, if they're running wars, they're not going to have small government.
No, they want to conserve the status quo. They want to conserve big government. In fact, they want to make big government bigger. They just claim they want to make it bigger at a slower rate than the Democrats. But hey, thanks for coming on the show, Ivan. Good luck with your book. Everybody else will do more from CPAC tomorrow. You've been listening to The Peter Schiff Show on ShiffRadio.com, the gold standard in talk radio.